Hello, and welcome to the third and final Mental Health Awareness Week podcast from EG, with me, Tim Burke, EG's deputy editor. The theme of the week has been kindness, and in this discussion, we ask what a kinder real estate industry can look like as we take on board lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic. There was a time when notions of caring and compassion would feel far removed from most big business. Is now the time to change that once and for all? I was joined to discuss this by Howard Morgan, founder of the Real Service Consultancy, Zoe Sinclair, founder of the This Can Happen initiative, and Juliet Smithson, head of operations at Lionheart, the RICS charity. As with all EG podcasts recorded during lockdown, we held and recorded this conversation via Teams. Enjoy. Zoe, this notion of kindness that has run throughout Mental Health Awareness Week, give us some idea of what that means to you when you consider it from the viewpoint of corporations, of any and all types.
Yes, Tim, really interesting. And I think probably this theme of kindness that obviously was changed from sleep for the theme of mental health awareness this week is probably so appropriate. I think when you think of big corporates, big business, the first word that comes to your mind is probably not kindness. But I do think that the world that we are living in at this time has brought a lot of kindness to the world. And it's been very easy for us, and rightly so, to think about all the awful things that Corona has been giving, but I think, or Corona has brought us, but I do think that kindness is something that has been seeping through organisations. And I have been hearing from companies that they've never known their companies to be so kind, that they have never got to know their teams better than ever before. And I feel that this is something that we need to hang on to pave the way, if you like, for kinder cultures in our workplaces. That, you know, you have a meeting and leaders don't just suddenly start the meeting and go straight for business. You know, they're talking about how people are feeling before they dive in and give priority to business. That is a step forward to kindness in the workplace, which I just feel we have to, we've got to cling on to at this time.
How do you think the current situation emphasised the importance of this? Was it the unexpected nature of the crisis that we entered that made everyone stop and reevaluate how we were connecting, how we were running businesses during this period? What's driven this, if we say, sort of double down focus on running our businesses in a more compassionate way?
I think the most obvious one, as far as I'm concerned, is obviously you're not in the same room and you can't physically see people in physical form that we're used to. And therefore, we are facing each other through a screen, and actually it gives another layer on top of people that we have to work hard at to sort of see through the screen. And therefore, people have had to work harder to create conversation and to create connections. And for me, that's like been the most important thing, the one thing that has made these conversations between manager and staff member, between teams, within organisations, people have had to make more of an effort. The second thing is that people are experiencing grief. Now, what do I mean by grief? I mean grief in all sorts of forms. Grief is a form of loss. Loss in going to work, a loss of being close to somebody, a loss of seeing family. There's so many things going on in people's lives that that compassionate side, that kind side, has to come out from people, because people, I believe, are wanting actually to talk more than they ever had done. So many of us are feeling things that we've never felt before. And so, as I said, managers and employees are feeling the need to talk more. And I think that is where the kindness is coming in, simply to make everyday life work.
Juliette, your thoughts from Lionheart's experience during this time?
I think it's been a great leveller. People who have been protected from other forms of challenges, where there's been perhaps been changes, companies restructures, job losses, that sort of thing. People have been, senior leaders have been protected from those, and they're not protected from COVID. It's affected all of us. We're not all in the same situation. Some of us have more resources than others, but we have all seen our lives curtailed and impacted, and we're all unable to see those people who are closest to us. And I think the other thing that I know has changed is that people have become more real. Zoe mentioned about people connecting before meetings. Actually, you don't normally see your boss's boss in a spare bedroom. You see a very professional front of someone, and we've actually seen into people's lives, and we've connected in a different way. I've certainly waved at people's small children on conference calls, and I've seen people's cats walking over their laptops. You know, we've seen people in a very, very different way. I also think it's become okay not to be okay. I think people who perhaps felt that mental health challenges were things experienced by other people and not them, and perhaps people who thought that that was a sign of weakness and someone who you didn't want in your organization, it's become those people who have those views have been affected themselves, and they've been stressed and anxious, and they felt under pressure, and I think it's accelerated this change of belief that we all wanted to get to, where people can see that this happens to anybody. It's no respecter of education or seniority or cash in the bank. It is something that that can affect literally anyone, and has done.
Zoe mentioned the fact that in a lot of companies, it doesn't feel like there's ever been so much kindness as at this point. And one of our guests on another podcast, Ben Channon at Asail Architecture, he mentioned that he thought we've seen some of the best of humanity during the lockdown. I wonder if you could all offer some thoughts on what good has looked like in these recent weeks. What examples could we highlight of best practice, could be large, could be small, that we're seeing coming from real estate as an industry, corporations more broadly? Howard, would you like to offer some thoughts there?
I think generally we've probably been giving each other more time, and that's an element of respect. That has actually meant, though we probably anticipated we'd have more free time, I suspect a lot of us are spending 8 hours a day on Zoom calls, which in itself is exhausting, but I do think we're actually getting more FaceTime with each other. Certainly I feel that. The use of the mobile phone, which is actually quite an impersonal tool, seems to have dropped away considerably. And I found myself having a call with a client recently where they, for whatever reason, chose not to come on screen and just had their voice. That was actually quite challenging. So I think we're getting quite used to getting more visual signals from each other, because I think the statistics are that only 10% of what we take in and when we're listening to people is actually what is said. I think 60% is body language. And so we do actually get quite a lot of body language from Zoom calls, though it's far from a perfect medium. But one of the best practices I've seen, and I'm enjoying working with a client on them at the moment, is where they've decided to embark on a coaching program right now, which you might think, well, there's plenty of other things to do, aren't there? But so for me, working as a coach with not just with senior managers, but with a group of a dozen people from this particular organization is a really interesting time to be talking to them about the business challenges and how they can particularly work with their customers. That's the tenant customers at this time. So I think investing in people at this time is a particularly interesting thing to be doing.
Juliet, from conversations that you may have had with people there at Lionheart, what success stories are you seeing? What inspirational initiatives would you be able to point to from this period?
I think we've seen a lot of companies bringing wellbeing, their wellbeing functions to the forefront, and they've always had a little air of perhaps more of a box ticking exercise. We want to get a diversity kick. We want to get an award. We want to look like a forward-looking employer. But I think they have become essential parts of the HR infrastructure at the moment, particularly for those firms who've had staff on furlough. I've seen some really really good practice around just calling people on furlough and just saying we're really sorry that this has been necessary, but we want to connect with you. This is what's happening in the business. This is what we're thinking you might do when you come back, and I think that putting well-being at the heart of people management has I think it was coming, but I think it's been accelerated, and I've seen some great ways of people creating connections, virtual socials, getting people to DAF challenges and quizzes, things that build human connection, and we've seen that both in the workplace and outside, in virtual choirs, and I've seen a virtual gin tasting going on and connecting people. And something that I read recently was about disabled people. This has actually enabled many people who have mobility challenges to connect on the same level as the rest of us, who don't have those difficulties to face. And I think that's been perhaps something we should really work at keeping, those making it possible for people to connect across virtually like we are today.
Yeah. So did you want to jump in with some thoughts here as well?
Yeah, and I echo what everyone has said so far. For me, a couple of things in addition have really come to the fore. So first of all, there are many companies out there who form some kind of mental health ally program. And this is when, on a voluntary basis, people step up to sort of become known as mental health allies. And they are people that individuals in the company can approach without necessarily going to HR and talk about mental health in a very sort of free way, but just someone for them to talk to. So I have found, I'm speaking to companies, that those that have these allies in place at the moment, the allies have just been doing the most amazing stuff over these past few months, probably more than they have ever had to do. But also what it's shown is that some companies, the allies have had too much to do, and that it's not a full-time job, and HR have had to take some kind of responsibility on this as well, which perhaps in the past HR wanted to sit back and just keep it a voluntary ally program. But these times, HR have had to step up, and it has been their responsibility as well. So I think that whole ally program has been really interesting. The one other thing that has been really lovely to hear is that those individuals, and we talked before about storytelling and members of the business stepping forward and advocating mental health, telling their own personal story to create these sort of cultures of kindness. One or two people have said to me the most wonderful thing, that they have suffered from mental health issues all their life, and yes, in the past they have stepped up and they've told their story, but in a way they have felt that this corona time has been their calling, that over the last years or whatever they have had, therapy, they have had help, and they are in a position to verbalize very well how they are feeling at this time. They have had the tools to talk about how they're feeling, and those people have really come to the fore at this time because they have been able to talk about their feelings and help other people who haven't been able to articulate how they are feeling. So I think that has been, you know, a really also great interaction of kindness, and where companies have really stepped up because they have these individuals that are willing to talk and know how to talk and have been able to help others who haven't been able to find the language to express how they're feeling at this difficult time.
Howard, you were going to respond, I think.
Well, I think picking up on this theme of best practice and the what fascinates me is that as an industry, we are able to come together very quickly and powerfully because we have access to some, you know, significant resources. And we've seen that through some of the initiatives taken by, you know, some of the biggest property companies to channel 20% of salaries or a director's salary, certainly into funds to support various causes. I think the Do Some Good initiative, that's a new initiative brought together by Deborah Udolph from Say Consulting and others, I think is really good channeling resources directly to care homes, hospitals and others. I think that's really good. And of course, the work of Land Aid and Lionheart. So I think there's some really fantastic work going on. What puzzles me and we're beginning to see it come to the surface, which is that as an industry, we're not being recognized for that good. And what is coming to the fore is quite a lot of pieces, articles, which are saying they're actually taking advantage of our customers. And this is principally in the landlord and tenant relationship. And I think there was a very significant piece by Luke Johnson in last week's Sunday Times, which literally accused our industry of abuse, of abusing its customers. So I'm fascinated by this contrast of an industry which I do believe is taking positive action to support keep the communities around its developments and more widely, but also this perspective that we're actually capable and still capable of abusing our customers by at a time of obviously extreme financial difficulty. So I think we need to challenge ourselves to ask the question, why is this happening? And as an industry, do we have the reputation and are we recognized as being an industry that is empathetic? Probably not. And I think that could be an issue for us.
How do you think the industry might be able to address that? I mean, you've talked about how quickly the industry can come together in tackling that specific, perhaps, perception.
Yes.
Of the sector. What kind of steps do you think firms might be able to take to combat that?
I think I've been impressed by all the work that's been happening within the property industry around the mental health agenda, something I've, you know, been passionate about now for the past 5 years or so through the John Halloran initiative. I've seen, and I'm really enthused by the individuals who are coming forward and clearly care about their colleagues and care about the business. So that's not getting out to the outside world. And so I was reading that, I think when it comes to empathy, 29% of the general population are perceived to have take a broad perspective and have empathy in a roundish sense. And when they did a study in the advertising industry, they found that only 30% of people in the advertising industry, only 1% more than the national average, were empathetic. It will be really interesting to measure, and there is some science around that subject, whether the property industry is more or less empathetic. But I think we need to raise the subject of empathy. We need to develop the skills. And simply, I would define empathy as being able to stand in others' shoes to actually see what they're seeing. I think we're probably more sympathetic than empathetic. I don't truly believe that as an industry we're yet fully capable of standing into others' shoes, and whether that's in the development process or leasing or management, I have a feeling that we're looking from outside rather than truly standing in our customers' shoes and stakeholders' shoes. So I think it's just going to take more investment, more work, more discussion.
Juliet, do you have some thoughts on that? the perspective that you might have on I guess the level of empathy within the industry, and also how as an industry we ensure that that touches all various parts of the supply chain, the tenants, that the people who are using our buildings.
Yeah, we have, well, the reason we run a mental health service at all in Lionheart is because traditionally the industry has not been terribly sympathetic or empathetic, and we have seen a shift there. We get more employer referrals now, so I think people are recognising that support is needed and support needs to be offered, so we are seeing that. I think we need to ready ourselves for a tsunami of mental health impacts further down the line. I think people are still in survival mode at the moment, but I think as people assess what's happening, we will see a great deal of demand for services across all the whole spectrum of services, from the very low level support services to the crisis intervention services. I think one thing we have seen is that bricks and mortar buildings are not necessarily essential to deliver this stuff. I know the NHS has seen a massive increase in its use of online and Zoom, that sort of, you know, those sort of platforms to support patients and clients, and I think we'll see more of that. I know that the services are concerned that we're not seeing the demand that we believe we should be, and again, carer concerned that their calls are 30% down, and this is about they're concerned that it's about privacy, about people not accessing services because they don't have a safe place and space to do that.
Zoe, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I can't talk about your industry specifically, but I think it's a very interesting point about, you know, the empathy and the hearing two sides of the story within one supply chain, I suppose. And I think there are more and more companies, industries who are looking at this whole, I suppose, the supply chain and how can you get good practice throughout the whole supply chain. And I just know of a couple of initiatives that are going on that you know, the property industry might be able to take note of. I think it's really important for companies to for industries to share. That's exactly what we do at This Can Happen. But for example, it started within the law firms, and I think banks have come on board, that they've created something called the Mindful Business Charter. And that's a collaboration of companies who are committed to drive change in the way that we work, mental health being one part of it. And that is looking at all suppliers in all links to law and banking to sign up to this Mindful Business Charter to, as the name suggests, to be mindful in the way we work. Other industries also are really looking very closely at, you know, when they go out to tender, when they are looking for new contracts, that the ways in which we work mindfully with mental health in mind, it is built into those contracts now. And yes, it sounds very idealistic, but if you think about where we were perhaps with diversity and inclusion many years ago, you know, diversity and inclusion is often in contracts and going part of the tender process now. And companies are saying no to parts of the supply chain if they don't, if they're not rolling out D&I initiatives, as an example. So this might be very well, you know, a lot down the road from now, but perhaps the way we're working now in the midst of Corona, this might have we might be able to start looking at things with our supply chain and how we will work together, you know, a bit further down the line. I'm hoping so anyway.
Are you hopeful, Howard, of that kind of outcome?
I am hopeful, but I'm also a little bit fearful, because one of the things I'm beginning to see is that the supply chains, when times are tough, and we are in a recession, supply chains are the first thing to get hit. And if the supply chain begins to be fearful and starts being protectionist, or clients begin to see their supply chain as dispensable, then I don't think we're going to be having the kind of conversations which I agree with Zoe we should be having. So I think we may have to be fighting a tide, which is going, if that's mixing my metaphors, but I think that we've got to make sure that we actually work even harder to work with suppliers rather than see them as a dispensable group. I've been just thinking more widely about kindness and motivation. I think we do need to just ask ourselves the question, what are we trying to do in the property industry? And I think increasingly we are thinking about our social responsibility, whether it's to the supply chain or to our communities. So I think that's good, but I don't know about you, but one of the places I've been finding some peace and quiet is watching Ricky Gervais on his Afterlife series, which is really looking at the whole series of moral questions. And in episode 5, which I've just watched, he says, a society is great when old men plant trees, the shade of which they will never sit in. And I thought that was great from Ricky Gervais, but in fact, it's a Greek proverb. But I do think it's true of our industry that we need to have a longer outlook. And I think particularly around education, I think we've got a lot more work to do around education and developing this wider understanding of what being a responsible citizen is all about. I think it needs to be part of our university courses and so on. So I think we can, I think those who might be described as the old men, and let's not be sexist, but to all of us who have been in the industry a while, need to think, are we doing everything we can to make sure that we're putting in place tomorrow's industry? I'm horrified that any article would appear saying that we are abusing our customers. That just cannot be right. And it's amazing how many people read those articles, and it reinforces stereotypical views of our industry. So I think we've got to work very hard to counter those views.
Well, let me ask you each for a final thought here, if I can, on the opportunity for change and the opportunity perhaps to reset industry's priorities here. If we've talked a lot about the need not necessarily to go back to business the way it was before this crisis started, and I wonder if I could ask each of you just to point to one aspect of quote unquote business as usual that you'd like to see rethought, maybe changed as we move ahead, that could help us to be more caring, kinder, more compassionate as companies and as colleagues. Zoe, could I ask you to kick us off?
So following on from what Howard just said, I think that the younger people, taking us as the oldies, the younger people that are entering the workforce now, or who are in the workforce and have been for the last couple of years, I think that they are not going to allow us to continue as business as usual. And it is those people that are coming up the ranks that they will not allow us to continue in the way that we have done, and will want us to continue more with the kinds of cultures that we have been seeing at the moment. And they will question us oldies to ensure that our practices change, and that we go forward in the way that we all want to, but perhaps we haven't seen yet.
Juliet, some thoughts from you?
I think the 9-to-5 office day might be on its last legs. I think it's going to be very difficult for employers to claim that flexible working doesn't work when we've been in a long sort of 9-week project now of making it work and making working from home work. And I think employers that don't embrace good work-life balance as a core part of their what they wanted to deliver for their staff, I think those people might find themselves struggling to recruit. As Zoe said, the up and coming talent will be looking much wider than how much money is going into my bank each month. They're going to look for, what else are you going to give me? Are you going to give me flexibility to see my family? Are you going to give me that work-life balance? Are you going to let me make decisions about when and how I work for myself?
And Howard, maybe a final thought from you on the opportunity to reset priorities now.
Yeah, well, I think the challenge for us is that people understand us as an industry that provides buildings and space. And as is widely being discussed now, the number one concern people have is healthy environments and safe places to work. And I think there's an opportunity if we can present ourselves as an industry which is actually helping address the many problems coming out of COVID, including safety at work and providing safe environments. I think we'll be recognised perhaps more as an industry which is recognising that it delivers services to people rather than buildings to places.
That's excellent. Well, Howard, Juliet, Zoe, thank you so much for an inspiring discussion. I hope you all take a lot away from Mental Health Awareness Week. And as always, thank you for sharing your time and your thoughts with EG.